Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman for the remainder of this week. And I am joined in studio by Fred Jackson, our nifty news director for American Family News. What's up, Nifty?
You have this thing, don't you, about when you introduce people, you know, with Brother Ray Pritchard, you know.
Yeah.
You come up with descriptives.
Yeah, I usually do that for Ray, but I just thought, yeah, I'm doing it for Fred.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
And I also want to welcome our co-host, the irrefutable Dr. Alex McFarland, co-host of Exploring the Word, heard at 3 p.m. Central Time right here on this network. Good morning, Alex.
All glory to God. It's great to be with you guys.
Well, you're going to go all spiritual on me. I thought you were going to say something about, you know, irrefutable.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, do you remember the 90s rock band R.E.M.? Do you remember R.E.M.?
I do. I wasn't a fan, but I've heard of them.
Nor I, but I will quote one of their songs. It's the end of the world as we know it, but I feel fine.
I do remember that song. The only reason I remember the song is because at the beginning of the movie Independence Day, you know, the aliens invading. And
Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, Jeff Goldblum. That song was playing when – anyway, I'm getting – off the subject.
Well, sometimes if you look at the news, you'll think it's the end of the world as we knew it, won't you?
Yeah, that's right.
But the Lord is in control.
Amen. That's right. All right. Well, it is March 15th. We're halfway through the third month of the year. And Fred, everything just seems to be going swimmingly.
Swimmingly, yeah. Speaking of swimming, a U.S. drone was knocked out of the sky yesterday. It was flying over the Black Sea, doing what the American officials are calling routine surveillance, you know, over the Black Sea. Now, when we use the term drone, you may think of those little ones that are about a foot and a half long.
Right.
You know,
at the park. Throwing frisbees.
No. This is a $32 million drone. It's about the size of a Cessna airplane.
Right.
You've probably seen pictures of it. Well, yesterday there was an encounter between one of our drones and two Russian Su-27 fighter planes. Now, this is the story as of this morning. One of those Russian fighter jets, they were over the Black Sea. We are told that the U.S. drone was in international waters. Black Sea is huge.
Right.
So supposedly it was in international waters doing routine surveillance. According to the reports, a Russian fighter jet hit the propeller, which is at the back of that drone.
Right.
Resulting in our drone crashing into the Black Sea. As far as I know, there's been no recovery thus far of that drone. Now, the United States' response to all of this is, so far from the White House at least, they're calling in the ambassador, obviously the expected. We're not happy with what happened. That fighter jet should not have been anywhere near our drone because it was in international waters. Well, House Committee on Homeland Security Chair Mark Green, he's a Republican from Tennessee, he wants a full accountability from the Russians. Cut one.
It's bullying from Russia. It's unacceptable. It's a hostile act, at a minimum, on their part. We're in international waters, and it's far more serious than unprofessionalism. I think we continue the sanctions. We make those. They should be as crushing as they possibly can be. They should have been from the very beginning. The fact that we stair-stepped it has only, you know, emboldened Putin to do this kind of stuff. We should put them on maximally, and we should continue in Ukraine to supply what the Ukrainians need to defend their sovereignty.
Well, this kind of thing used to go on all the time with the U.S. and the Soviet Union. Now, the Russians are claiming our jet didn't touch it, that I think it's a Reaper drone is what they called it, is what they call it. The Russians are claiming that the drone went into the drink because it was maneuvering sharply. They have offered to try to collect the drone.
I bet they have.
Yes.
Yes. How nice of them.
Alex, that's just, you know, they're just trying to be neighborly. They said, we'll pick it up. We'll try to help figure out what went wrong. Meanwhile, they try to get some access to our drone technology. Are you buying their explanation?
Listen, they're so kind, you know, with friends like this. Who needs enemies?
Right.
But yes, they'll recover the drone and in about a year give it back to us. And it's any information gathering capabilities, hard drive or whatnot, will have been scanned and scrubbed, I'm sure.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's going on. Listen, the tensions are escalating. In fact, that's what the Russians are claiming. They're claiming that we are escalating the situation by accusing them of clipping the drone. Now, these are remotely piloted
Yes.
vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I guess it is technically possible that there could be pilot error in terms of someone far away maneuvering. But these are people who are expert
Yes.
at using these drones. They know what the capabilities are of these. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying what the Russians are saying. I think they don't like the fact that the U.S. is supplying arms to Ukraine. And this is their way of thumbing their nose at us.
Yeah, I also heard some reaction, and it went along this line, that both the Chinese and the Russians feel that Joe Biden is a very weak leader.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they can, you know, the Chinese believe they can send spy balloons across our continent.
In fact, they did.
And they did. And we didn't shoot it down until the Chinese got all the pictures that they wanted
right.
Across the U.S. And so some are speculating that the Russian leader Putin says, you know, let's go ahead and take one of those $32 million drones down. We know we're just going to get a little verbal reaction from the White House, and that'll be it.
Yeah.
Well,
interestingly, guys, it was exactly 1 month ago today that the Chinese balloon it first hit the news February 15.
Wow.
Just a month ago today. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't think you have to be all that politically astute to recognize that these little acts of bullying would not take place under other administrations.
Right. All right. So we'll keep an eye on that. We'll see who the first of the U.S. has said we are going to protect basically our own assets. I think they call them equities. We're going to make sure we pick up this drone. So tensions are high in Europe. Russia is at war with another country that it invaded just a year and a month ago or so. And so there is a great deal of tension in Europe, and these are the kind of things that can trigger a hot war or hostilities. So we hope calmer heads will prevail, but we'll keep an eye on it.
Okay. Yesterday, one of the stories that we covered were some comments from President Joe Biden with regards to the moves that are being made by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis to protect kids who are sexually confused and may say they want to change the way they look. You can't change, as we've noted many times, you can't change your biology. You're born a male, you're a male. You're born a female, you're a female. But we do know what's going on in this country, sadly. And it's mostly, it seems to be girls who believe they want to identify as something else. And in some jurisdictions, medical people and the governments, the state governments, are willing to allow them to have operations that, well, many people call the mutilation of their bodies. Well, President Joe Biden, he's against any moves to try to protect these kids really from themselves when they're in a period of confusion. And so I wanted to play this clip again of Joe Biden being very critical of the moves that DeSantis is making to try to protect these kids. Cut 7.
Transgender kids is a really harder thing. What's going on in Florida is, as my mother would say, close to sinful. I mean, it's just terrible what they're doing. It's not like, you know, a kid wakes up one morning and says, you know, I decided I want to become a man or I want to become a woman or I want to change. I mean, What are they thinking about here? They're human beings. They love. They have feelings. They have inclinations that are, I mean, it just to me is, I don't know, it's cruel. And the way we do it is we make sure we pass legislation like we passed on same-sex marriage. You mess with that, you're breaking the law, and you're going to be held accountable.
Well, Governor DeSantis has responded to those comments from Joe Biden. Governor DeSantis yesterday saying it is not sinful to prohibit the mutilation of minors. It is not acceptable, he says, for the federal government to mandate that procedures like sex change operations be allowed for kids. And in part of this response, which I think he made on Twitter, he showed some pictures of how these, and again, it's mostly girls, of having some of their body parts removed, modified. And what happens, as we noted yesterday, Ed and Alex, many of these young ladies, a few years down the road, have deep regrets as to what they did to their bodies. And so that's what Governor DeSantis and other Republican governors in the country are trying to do, are trying to protect these kids who are going through a very time of emotional upheaval.
Well, Alex, it seems to me, get your take on this, it seems to me that the word mutilation is fair to use in these kind of circumstances. We're not talking about having to remove a tumor or a limb that's been badly damaged in a car wreck. We are talking about essentially cosmetic surgery. Most kids who are gender dysphoric, which is what, I don't know if they still use that terminology to talk about the fact that someone is unhappy with their gender and feel alienated from it. Most of them grow out of it. But yeah. Do you think it's fair to call what's being done, especially to girls, is mutilation a fair way of describing what's being done to them?
Absolutely. It is mutilation. It is child abuse on the highest scale. And, I mean, there's so much we could say. But, I mean, for Joe Biden, who in January of 2020, he said there's no place in the Democrat Party for someone who is not pro-choice. For the most pro-abortion president imaginable to lecture us on what is or isn't sin, a man that has flagrantly disregarded everything about not only God's revelation, but the natural law of morality written on every human heart, the mere fact that he would try to say something as heinous as gender, you know, mutilation of young people is sin, that's just ludicrous. But I want to say this, having worked with teenagers for now 30 years, I got to tell you, there is so much emotional and psychological development taking place, really even up into 1920, or especially among young males, males into the early 20s. So here's the thing. I mean, look, you can't buy a beer unless you're 21. Do you know, a lot of people don't know this, you know correction fluid, whiteout?
Yeah.
Do you know you can't buy whiteout till you're 18? Seriously. Oh, because in some places, kids breathe those vapors to get high, right? So if you've got to be 18 years old to buy correction fluid, why would children be allowed to engage in surgery and gender transitioning and hormone replacement therapy that would so radically damage their bodies and their psyche? But we know that the imposition of all of this transgenderism on America, it's part of a larger move to absolutely divorce us from knowledge of morality. And it's all about making people really almost subhuman and more controllable, so big government and statism can take control of this country.
You know, it was interesting. Our own Bishop Jackson yesterday dealt with this story, and he really did hone in on President Biden's reference to what was going on in Florida to try to protect these kids from themselves. Joe Biden called that sinful. And Bishop Jackson yesterday, he said it brought to his mind a scriptural quote from Isaiah 5:20, "Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. And I think that's exactly for Joe Biden to say it is sinful for a state to try to take efforts to protect these confused kids. Joe Biden calling that sinful. That's blasphemous. I think the bishop was quoting Isaiah 5:20 just fit the bill.
And the especially the first few chapters of Isaiah, I mean, some of the book of Isaiah is directed towards future events and so on and so forth, but it is describing a culture in chaos.
Yes.
And that is an apt description of our culture. It is certainly moral chaos when the supposed leader of our nation goes after, basically he's going after parents, not just Governor DeSantis, but going after parents who don't want their kids being taught this transgender ideology and saying they're being sinful as well. So you can't get a more accurate reflection of what Isaiah was talking about hundreds and thousands of years ago and what's happening in our culture. And it's disturbing. And frankly, the pressures that a lot of young people are under, I think, has led to even more confusion about their place in the world. And what's really sinful, Alex, is the fact that when they turn to adults in their lives for help, I'm not talking about their parents, because a lot of schools now will not tell the parents that their child is having questions about their gender. When they turn to adults for help, the guidance counselors, sometimes even psychologists, teachers, other officials in school, they, instead of being told, well, you're just going through a time of mental questioning and emotional questioning, you need to get your mind straight, they are now saying you need to get your body in line with your confusion. So they turn to adults for help, and they are being told that your confusion is what you really are.
Yeah, it really is very sad, and it's very irresponsible on the part of we adults, not us, but I mean those in positions of leadership. But you mentioned Isaiah, and Fred, I was just thinking of that scripture, and I'm glad Bishop Jackson invoked Isaiah 5:20 about woe to those who call good evil and evil good, because we really are living in those times. But I was thinking about Isaiah this morning, Isaiah 5:5, God talked about Judah coming under judgment. And there's this phrase in Isaiah 5:5, it says that I will remove the hedge from around my vineyard. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're seeing is, folks, that the hedge of protection that for really 2.5 centuries did it protected America, and we were stable, and we were prosperous. And, you know, prior to 9/11, there had never really been American blood shed on American soil by an outside entity. The hedge of protection that was kind of the secret sauce to America's greatness was Christianity. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, I've got to believe even the most casual observer of history would have to acknowledge we had unparalleled prosperity, stability, achievements in so many areas, technologically, medically. We were, as Reagan would say, the city on a hill. And the hedge of protection, not only has it been removed, I mean, there have been forces in our country that have kicked it down. And what we're seeing in our nation, and I love America, and I trust our Lord, but we're seeing an America where, to a large degree, we've said to God, no thanks, we got it from here on. But the hedge has been taken away, and we're seeing the results of that.
You know, it was in the late 1950s, Nikita Khrushchev, Soviet leader, said that America, and I'm paraphrasing, America would fall basically from weakness within.
Right.
I'm paraphrasing that. And I wonder, Alex, to your point, just was thinking about that, is that what we're seeing, that the framework of this country, that this country was built upon, Christian principles, Christian values, because those are being compromised by a very powerful forces in this country, that somehow that I hate to call it a prophecy by a Soviet leader, but we're kind of seeing what he talked about. It's not so much enemies firing upon us from the outside, but there's something going on inside that's causing a spiritual cancer of sorts.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I think about Exodus 1:8 says there arose a Pharaoh who did not know Joseph. You know, you go back to like Genesis 37-45, Joseph of the coat of many colors, that Joseph, saved Egypt and even many of the people in Canaan. And for, you know, decades and decades, they had prosperity and stability because Joseph led in a godly way. But just like there's a generation that doesn't know Joseph, we are several generations into an America that they don't know how Christianity played a role not only in the American Revolution, but the foundation of our government. They don't know that the secret to our greatness was the church and the family. Now, we can see those things restored. And, you know, Bert Harper and I on Exploring the Word, and I, as I travel, you know, all year long, I'm calling on people to pray and let's restore the family and the church. But we're seeing an America that doesn't know who it is. We're I would believe, Ed and Fred, we're in a spiritual and civic identity crisis.
Hmm. Well, and we're certainly separated, divorced from the ideas of the founding fathers, which, as you guys know, their understanding, these were such brilliant men. Certainly not perfect. We don't ascribe perfection to any human being. Only the Lord Jesus Christ was perfect. But these were brilliant men. They had studied previous democracies, republics, experiments in freedom and liberty, and they had charted the course that those governments, those city-states, those larger republics, they charted the course of their lives and tried to figure out what is it that brought the experiment in liberty to an end. And so they fashioned a government that would try to prevent those kinds of things from recurring. So there were, for example, separation of powers rather than allowing power to be centralized, those kinds of political protections. But ultimately, they understood, as George Washington famously said in his farewell address in 1792, that you can't have political prosperity without morality and religion. And you can't have morality without religion, that morality and religion were indispensable supports for political prosperity. And we are jettisoning the supports of political prosperity, and that's why we see an encroachment upon liberty by an increasingly powerful and ravenous centralized government. It's exactly what our founders foresaw because they had seen it in history. And to your point, Alex, we are rotting out from within because we are ignoring the two pillars that support political prosperity and thus liberty, and that's morality and religion. And in our country, that religion was Christianity.
Amen.
So, amen. All right, folks. Well, it's probably enough preaching for our segment. It's part of the danger of having a couple of preachers on, and Fred's a Sunday school teacher, so you're in the same camp. And we're going to make things worse. After the break, we're bringing another preacher in. We're bringing
it's just an occupational hazard, isn't it?
That's right. We're bringing in Abraham Hamilton III, general counsel and public policy analyst, and also host of the hugely popular, huge the Hamilton Corner. So anyway, we're going to take a short break, folks. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. When we come back, Abe will join us.
What does the American Family Association stand for?
We believe true morality flows from biblical principles and directs people to the manner in which God intends them to live.
These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church.
We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us as we seek to stop the erosion of godly values.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness, and may He give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes. Stand by for news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. These are very strange days in the world of politics. Fox News has clearly chosen sides in the Republican presidential primary. They've thrown in with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Now, DeSantis is a good man, no doubt would make a great president, so would a number of other Republicans. The question is, who will be the standard bearer of the conservative movement? And I've come to the conclusion President Trump deserves a second chance. Well, a third chance, but you know what I mean. But what's odd is that Tucker Carlson and Alex Jones have turned on the president. In a span of just a few days, both men accused Trump of being autistic. Carlson is also on record saying he hates Trump passionately. It's all very strange. All I can tell you is there's a civil war within the conservative movement. So do your homework and support the candidate who best represents your values, and most importantly, listen to your still small voice. I'm Todd Starnes.
Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way of everlasting. Psalm 139, 23 through 24.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson. Dr. Alex McFarland joins us from afar. Where are you at, Alex?
I am in Colorado, en route to North Carolina.
Okay. All right. Yes. Well, thank you for joining us, Alex, remotely.
Honored to do so.
And so we welcome, as we try to on Wednesdays, if his schedule allows, to have Abraham Hamilton III on with us here on Today's Issues, General Counsel and Public Policy Analyst. He's also host of the Hamilton Corner, heard weekdays at 5 p.m. Central Time right here on American Family Radio. Abe, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
All right. So, Fred, we talked about what we might pitch to Abe. We were actually having a fantastic conversation during the break, folks. We were going to see if we can't crank this back up here in just a moment. But let's pitch our story subject to Abe, and we'll get going.
Yeah. Well, it's almost been a week, believe it or not, since the rumors started of problems at Silicon Valley Bank. And basically, they didn't have enough money to cover the demand. And what we found out is that people were starting to panic. And it was first perceived as Joe Biden on a white horse to the rescue, that they were going to save us all. Now, just to remind people, there is a guarantee for people $250,000 or less that their money is protected if a bank goes under.
Right.
FDIC insured banks.
Yeah, insured banks. So, but what happened on Sunday night, we get this announcement from the Biden White House, and Joe Biden said, my team did it. We decided that it's, you know, for those $250,000 and under, that's fine. But we want to help everybody who may have lost money when this bank collapsed. Well, sober second thought has taken place since Sunday night. Experts in the field of investment and that sort of thing are looking at this and saying what Joe Biden did was an absolute disaster. One of those people who's saying that is Kevin O'Leary. He's identified as a Canadian-American investor, and he invests millions of dollars.
He's on Shark Tank, isn't he?
He's the Shark Tank man. Mm-hmm. And basically, he said something kind of scary, that basically in what Biden and his team did was pretty well kind of a nationalization of mm-hmm. banks, that kind of policy. Anyway, this is what he had to say. Kevin O'Leary's been interviewed now at CNN. He's interviewed yesterday on Fox News. So this is a little bit of what he had to say. Cut number four.
What I see here, you know, regardless of where you stand in politics, it's a pretty bad policy, because what we did, in my view, it's a personal opinion, over the weekend, is to nationalize the American banking system. We basically told everybody around the world, no, regardless of who you are and what bank you're in, no matter how much you have, we guarantee it. We don't care who you are or why it's there, but no matter what happens, it's guaranteed. So just think about it. I'd like to keep this very simple. I'm a bank manager in a bank today after this new policy decision, and I get compensated on the value of my bank's stock. You just told me I could take all the depositors' money, go to Las Vegas, put it on red. Maybe I double it. Maybe I lose it all. But it doesn't matter to me, because you, the taxpayer, and the government guarantee all my depositors. As long as I play by the rules that we have now and the football rules of banking, I get to go crazy. And I think this is a very bad mistake.
All right. So, Abe, I know that you, I think you talked about this issue last night.
I did. On
your
the Hamilton
show,
Corner, I did.
On the Hamilton Corner. We actually had a pretty spirited conversation in our story meeting this morning about, you know, what's, you know, pure capitalism and you just let the market do. But, you know, we do have FDIC. That's a government corporation
funded by our tax dollars exclusively.
Well, so how far is too far? I mean, what's your take on what's happened, what O'Leary just said? Mm-hmm. You know, what's your take on the right mix? Is what the Biden administration did wrong or par for the course?
I think it's absolutely wrong for a host of reasons. So there are a couple additional facts that need to be factored into this discourse, this discussion. First of all, the rules up until this weekend for the entire existence of the FDIC insured mm-hmm. depositors up to $250,000 per depositor per account, no more. Every American who goes into the bank, you look on the wall, you see the FDIC insured $250,000 notice, right? This weekend, they threw that regulation that was imposed by law to the wind. A factor to consider, the Silicon Valley Bank is described as a country club of banks. That's kind of the play place for Silicon Valley, the tech startups and all of these places. The reality is there were very few accounts in Silicon Valley Bank that had less than $250,000 in them. So the FDIC insurance wouldn't have applied to these depositors because they had more than $250,000. They could only get up to $250,000. So an example, Kevin O'Leary is on Shark Tank. Mark Cuban has some of his money there. He had like $10 million in this bank. Some of the fundamental reasons for the bank suffering the run, not having a chief risk officer, following all of these regressive woke policies, do all of these other things other than ensuring that they are financially solvent and stable, led the bank to this place. One of the fundamental core features that led to this issue was the bank bought 10-year treasury yields several years back at a 2% interest rate. Well, with the Federal Reserve hiking interest rates, and the listeners who may not be aware, the interest rates for Treasury notes are determined by the Federal Reserve's interest rates. So having previously purchased 10-year Treasury bonds at 2% interest, well, the current interest rates are 5% and up. So what the bank was trying to do, having leveraged itself to the place where it's desperate for an influx of cash, they would accept things which is not conventional as collateral, like yachts and other things. When you're trying to establish get collateral, banking entities want things that they can immediately turn back into cash. You know, used cars are far more sellable than yachts. You don't have – it's expensive. So all of these risky decisions that they were doing, in addition to purchasing these treasury yields, they decided, man, we need an influx of cash. So what we're going to do is sell the 2% 10-year treasury yields at a discount, 75 cents per dollar. But to use that revenue to try to buy 5% treasury yields. So what ended up happening, depositors start learning, wait a minute, our bank is trying to find cash for some reason? And it scared them. And so in one day, you have $42 billion withdrawn from a bank that has a total of about $200 billion. So what you have, it's not the question about pure capitalism, market intervention. I think the discussion needs to also include the responsibility of the entities involved. You literally are a bank.
Yes.
Your job is financial stability, solvency, and being profitable to your shareholders and depositors. But as Kevin O'Leary pointed out, you are being rewarded in this instance for being uber risky, not to mention that the CEO or some other executives sold their stock a couple weeks before the bank had the run on and all this other kind of stuff. So it's a bad sign for our country and other banks because, as Kevin O'Leary pointed out, if you perform poorly, don't worry, Big Daddy government, i.e. you and me, American taxpayers, will be the ones coming to the rescue.
All right, let me ask you this, and then, Alex, you jump in if you've got a question for Abe.
Sure.
So what President Joe Biden did – in guaranteeing all these accounts up to now, I think you can have like $250,000. I'm a man, so I have a wife.
Right.
She could have $250,000, and then together we could have a joint account with $250 each. So it's a total of $1 million, but far below, I'm sure, what these Mark Cuban had. You know, $10 million. I don't even have $250,000. But so what Joe Biden did, is that legal? He guaranteed beyond what the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, again, this is a government corporation, okay, was created in 1933 because of
34,
the 1934. Oh, I'm sorry, I went by Wikipedia. So, but that was following all the bank failures that led, at least in part, to the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. So this is all government stuff. So does Joe Biden have the legal authority to do what he did?
No, not to unilaterally change the rules like he did. Now, on the one hand, I don't want American citizens, regardless of whether they are politically, losing their money because of the bank's foul play. However, let's say hypothetically, I have $1 million. I have a responsibility, knowing the FDIC insurance regulations, not to put $1 million in one bank, in one account.
Right.
If I know that I'm only insured up to $250,000, why do I have to play by the rules, but people who have more money than me don't have to play by the rules? And here's one of the biggest problems. The FDIC as a corporation only has about $120 billion itself.
Right.
So to come in and insure depositors up to $200 billion, you're going to bankrupt the FDIC in a revenue that should be insurable for the rest of Americans. So what's going to happen then? We don't have to ask. We already know, because this happened in 2009. The FDIC is going to appeal to Congress and say, we need an infusion of money to put the FDIC back in a solvent position, and guess where that money comes from? So the taxpayer gets doubly taxed for the bank's malfeasance and, you know, Mr. Robinette and his gang who can't shoot straight saying that they're coming to the rescue. It's easy to come to the rescue with somebody else's money. That's not their money. It's not their money. And so you have the taxpayer once again bearing the brunt, and it is effectively the nationalization of this bank, because ultimately all of the funds using to pay these depositors are coming straight from the rest of the American taxpayers. As if the government owned the bank.
Yeah.
All right, exactly. Alex, jump in.
Yeah, I mean, when you foot the bill, you are de facto the owner. Interestingly, one of the early opponents of the creation of the FDIC was FDR. Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Now, he's known as a big government, really. I mean, he was one of our first it could be argued one of our first presidents that pushed us towards socialism. But interestingly enough, FDR was against the creation of the FDIC because he felt like it would federalize or nationalize banking. But let me just say this, and I want to make a prediction that the debt ceiling will be raised again within this calendar year. And that breaks my heart because I just am so debt averse. But look, if the FDIC insures the depositor, but the government's checkbook insures the FDIC, there's got to be cash coming from somewhere, and yet, you know, we're going to have to raise the debt ceiling to go further in the red. Abe, and you can comment, and feel free to disagree. I believe that there's a move afoot. We talked about this morning. Just as the defund the police is really, there's a narrative beneath that about federalizing law enforcement. Mm-hmm. I believe those on the progressive left want to nationalize banking. Mm. And this will further make us just one big communist state. I really think that's a story behind the story about this.
No, I don't disagree with you at all in that, Alex. And I think we've seen things happening along this line that's moving more and more features of American economic life into the auspices of the government. Remember under the Obama administration, What happened with student loans? They became directly insured by the government to where the government became the one disseminating the student loans. What happened with the TARP bailout and the other mortgage entity bank bailouts? The government became the ultimate arbiter. So you see these large sectors of American economic life being subsumed into the government. I don't think it is it's an open secret, if you will, that this is their desire because it's right out of the consistent Marxist playbook. You know, some of the same –
because they hate capitalism.
They absolutely despise capitalism.
We're watching the dismantling of capitalism one brick at a time.
Yes.
Yeah, but socialism and communism work so well in its place. So yeah. There's nothing but misery coming down the pike. Fred, we'll get you back in.
Yeah, well, I just remember what happened in Canada after the truckers had their dispute. Yep. How did Trudeau end that? He basically froze their bank accounts.
That's right.
I'm going. You're not even going to be able to buy a Coca-Cola. Right. I'm just going to freeze your bank account. And this is when I saw O'Leary using this term nationalized. What I saw is the federal government taking power.
Yeah.
Power over your bank account, where you're going to spend. It's kind of a scary track that we're on here, because we're devolving. I'll put it that way. We're devolving into a point where dependence on the federal government is becoming more vogue all the time. And what a lot of people don't see, I'm afraid, is greater dependence on a central government gives the central government much more power over your life.
Yeah. And that is folded into the demonization of people who accumulate wealth independently, you know. The evil rich, the evil this, the evil that. It's like you're not inherently evil because you have a lot of money. You know, you're evil based on what's in your heart. You can use the resources for good things or for bad things. You know, and the evil rich always somehow seem never to apply to, like, Bill Gates. Apply to those kind of folks. They're not the evil rich. Mm. But it's everybody else, you know, who may have money.
Yeah.
All right, so let's turn the discussion just a little bit here and talk about what we were talking about during the break, because I want our listeners to hear some of it. I'm not sure if Alex was able to hear. He probably wasn't able to hear, so he'll catch on quickly where we're going with this. But I've done a lot of reading, as you have, probably Alex. We all probably become aware of this kind of stuff. But I've read some of the original writings of, like, Benito Mussolini, mm-hmm. who invented fascism, mm-hmm. okay, and Lenin, some of these others. When it comes to communism. And in my opinion, I'm not a historian or an expert in these matters, but to me, socialism and fascism, communism, are two sides of the same coin, because they both involve the state becoming God. Mm. All right. Because during the break, we were talking about the woke ideology that had infected the Silicon Valley Bank and is infecting a lot of boardrooms and the daily decisions of corporations all over this country, because the more our nation pulls away from God and from its Christian roots, the more secular it becomes. You have to have a God, and the state becomes God. To Fred's point, that state has to have full and complete control over the lives of the people under it, under its control. Mussolini would write things about there's nothing but the state, nothing but the state. So why don't you kind of tell our listeners a little bit some of the things you were talking about in terms of Romans 1 and woke ideology, and I think you were referring to some other articles that you had read. Tell our listeners a little bit about what you were talking about during the break.
Yeah, the first thing, and I read this piece by Dennis Prager. It's an excellent article. It's titled "When Banks and Other Institutions Try to Change the World." And he made some observations, but I went a little bit further than the observations he made. One of the points he brought out, which I thought was a very salient point, was that this Silicon Valley Bank demise is emblematic of the rise of leftism. Y'all know I call it regressivism,
right?
Which reduces everything. It makes everything political. There are no things that can be separated from the concept of politicization. You know, whether or not, you know, these masks work or they don't work. We can't merely have a scientific discussion about them.
Right.
We have to have a political discussion, because regressivism requires all things to be political. Why? Because of the second thing. With the ascendancy of secularism, the ascendancy of secularism does not replace the hardwiring that God placed in us. God made mankind to worship. So if mankind denies, as Romans 1 says, the Creator as he is revealed, they exchange the truth of God for the lie. So this almost omnipresence of politicizations of everything is directly connected to man's necessity to worship. But when you deny the God of the Bible, all there is left to worship is the state. Silicon Valley Bank did not have a chief risk officer until 8 weeks ago. The touchstone of banking is assessing risk. What do we invest in? What do we not invest in? What loans do we provide? Which ones do we avoid? Assessing risk is intrinsic to functioning as a banker. You don't have a risk officer. Oh, but you do have this woke agenda. You have the LGBTQIAP plus Olympics, and you have the celebration of utilizing your position in finance to advance speaking in underserved communities. What does that have to do with profitability? Nothing. But it has everything to do with your operations if you're looking to find meaning in your function and your occupation that is separated or not even related to what the function of the business is. So no matter what is going on, we have to have this prevailing anti-God, man-centered notion of morality. That's why you have the corruption of news, for example. News, and as we have Fred here from the Canadian BBC, reporters used to have significance and value their function as reporters, allowing the populace to be informed. We cannot have a constitutional republic with democratic features where the citizens elect their leaders and shape policies through their representatives if we have an increasingly ignorant populace. It can't work. But if you no longer can find meaning in that, you have to have something altruistic above that. We have to march on the regressive socio-political agenda. Same thing with sports writers. You know, what happened to the times when you could actually watch a sports show and find out how many goals my man from the Rangers scored? You know, he's on a tear right now. You know, are the Bruins going to score 100 goals this year? No, you have to have a conversation. Well, did the Minnesota Wild wear their pride jerseys? What does it have to do with playing hockey?
I'm going to let you jump in here next, Alex. I'm blown away with the hockey knowledge. You apparently have picked up the Minnesota Wild, the New York Rangers. I'm proud of you, man.
Hey, full service over here. Full service.
All right, Alex, I know when we get to discussions about secularism and the things that Abe's been talking about, you want to jump in.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like, what does woke ideology have with doing business? What does woke ideology have with winning sports games? I mean, do you guys ever get weary of just everything? Oh, my goodness. If I get a stick of chewing gum, there's got to be an awareness of how it relates to the narrative. But here's the crazy thing. Okay, in 1958, communists that wanted to take America for communism, they had 45 objectives. you know, get in the schools, get in the government, get, you know, all get in the mainstream media. It's interesting, a decade later in the late 1960s, and this is well documented in books like Jeffrey Satinover's book, Homosexuality and the Politics of Truth, the gay activists really had kind of a tribunal in Boston, and they said, hey, here's how we're going to mainstream sexual deviancy. And it's so funny because the communists and the pro-gay activists, they had these ideas, let's get in the mainstream, let's get in the classroom, let's get in the public square. And somewhere along the journey, and I would suspect it was probably in the 80s, but the communists and the gays realized that they were brothers in arms. We have to understand, and I say this, and I'll throw it back to you guys. Look, if you want to be gay or atheist or whatever, you can do that in your private life. But what conservatives and Christians have, to a degree, let happen is, and to a large degree, I blame pastors. And I can talk smack on pastors because I've pastored two churches. I know what the pastorate is. But we have allowed our nation to fall under the sway of communists, moral relativists, anarchists. And as the Edmund Burke quote said, all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. I still think there's a window of opportunity, but we have to realize that we're in a battle. And the surest way to lose a battle is to not know that you're in a battle.
Well, I mean, Abe, to Alex's point, people do seem to be waking up. Whether it's too late or not, I guess time will tell. I'm with Alex. I don't think it is too late because we have God on our side. I'm not trying to oversimplify it or over-spiritualize it. God does what he wants within the nations of men, and it seems to me that there is an awakening, but I got to be honest, the regressives, as you call them, I'm not sure I can think of an institution that they don't own lock, stock, and barrel, with the exception of the church, although there are plenty of problems within real churches. The church may be it in terms of withstanding the power of these institutions. So it is, to Alex's point again, it is a battle. Mm-hmm. People are waking up to it, but this isn't going to be easy to win.
No, it's not. And regressives have their eyes trained on infiltrating the church as well. That's why there are battles in the church. You literally have really Antichrist outposts presenting themselves as if they are among us and they are of us, who solely are present to infiltrate and to change the direction. And what Alex, the point that Alex made, and I want to make sure the listeners heard what he said, it's not that you have open card-carrying communists, anarchists that are out loud saying this is who we are, but our nation is under the sway of these people.
Right.
They have concealed their true intentions, but weaseled themselves into positions of influence and authority so that their policy prerogatives are effectively articulated. Like, I remember I did a show on the Communist Manifesto, specifically reading through it and just informing Hamilton Corner listeners how far along we are on that trajectory. Do you realize that Marx and Engels postulated in order to fund their regressive objectives with Marxism, a system of rents where all property is owned by the state and the citizens rent it from the government? Well, how do you explain things like property taxes? Yeah. Folks who pay their houses off and things of that nature, why are they still paying property taxes? Is that not a system of rents where it's your property, but only if you rent it from the government, and try not paying your property taxes and see what happens?
Yeah. All right, folks, we have a break coming up. You have anything you want to tease for your show tonight, or are you still working on it?
Well, I'm still working on a lot of different things, but we are going to discuss more of these worldview overarching philosophical questions as we delve into even more some of this SVB fallout, and then banks around the country now are being put on notice as the United States banking system in total has been downgraded by Moody's as of this morning.
All right, Abe, thanks. Folks, 5-minute break for news. We'll be right back.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.